the Spanish school, the rationalist school. We'll see Ibn Ezra and friends then. But today let's finish with Hizkuni and Bechor Shor. Okay, those are next generation of Rashi type commentaries. And I'm just going to, as I've been doing the last few weeks, introduce them by some of the things they say on this week's Parsha. Let's talk about what these commentaries have to say on these weeks. For one thing, you can't help but Parsha's told those Vayetze, Vayishlach, Vayeshev, see a patriarchal family that has problems. There are brothers that don't get along. There are brothers who deceive other brothers. And our sages tended to read these stories with a backdrop of what Ramban refers to quite often as Ma'ase Avot Siman Labanim. The patriarchs acted in certain ways, and they serve as omens and symbols for the future destinies of their descendants. Now, Jews living in France, remember, had a huge influence from the persecution of the Crusades and just Dafka at this time. In fact, I posited about 5 or 6 weeks ago that the proposition set forth by certain scholars that the reason why Jews started to render the Bible in pshat for the first time in almost 1,000 years to try to systematically give an exposition of the biblical text from the standpoint of pshat as opposed to drash that they were so used to using, is because of their exposure to Christian theologies. The best way to expose a Christian theology for what it is to say, you're not giving the pshat of that biblical prophecy. Right? All of a sudden, if they're telling that time and time again to Christians, you're going to say, wow, pshat. Let's start giving pshat ourselves. So some of these commentaries, especially the Bechor Shor, who outright in his commentary writes quite often, with this commentary I have responded to the heretics, and you know who he's talking about. So Rashi never says something like that, certainly not outright against Christianity. He will sometimes say, as a very famous case, "Na'aseh Adam b'tzalmenu kidmusenu," let us make man. Rashi says, if you want to be a dualist and bring a proof from this verse, right? Dualist is someone who thinks that there's more than one deity. Then all right, what can I do? The Torah let you do it. But the Torah has two purposes here. One, it lets you know the next pasuk when it says, well, God created man in singular, so Hatshuva B'tzido. So why did God speak of man in the plural this way? Mind you, there are two or three explanations for just out there. God speaks to man in the royal we. God was talking to the earth. Let us make man, you and me, earth. Let's come up with a man together.
Angels?
Right? Or, like Rashi says, he was talking to the angels to teach Derech Eretz. God allowed the dualist to say, see, even the Hebrews believe in two gods, in order to teach Derech Eretz. What? That a Gadol puts his arm around a Katon and says, tell me, what do you think about this? How should we do this? So it means that, you know, you go and make people feel better about what they're doing, etc., etc. So we see that in Rashi. We see it much more often in other Mefarshim. Rashbam does it. Again, what I'm talking about now is the polemic against the Christian. One of those polemics was not only whether Jesus is the Son of God or whether Jesus fulfilled what they call Old Testament prophecies. A lot of what drove these Christian-Jewish dialogue was the very nature, especially, of Yaakov. Christians had it out for Yaakov. They didn't like Yaakov. It's funny that they related to Esav. I mean, they wanted to have it both ways.
No kidding.
Because the previous pope before this one now used to love to cite three words in Bereishis to prove Christianity overcame Judaism. Virav Ya'avod Tzair. You get it? The younger one will prevail. Christianity clearly being the younger religion. So he liked to quote that pasuk all the time.
Yeah.
They can't have it both ways because throughout the writings of so many church scholars in the Middle Ages, they were Esav being abused and taken advantage of by Yaakov, by the Jew. Right? So they had to get even with us by showing up with 400 soldiers and not being as kindly disposed as Esav was in this week's parasha, but actually doing something about the Jewish treachery. So they referred to these stories. See, look how you're behaving with us. Like it told us, we just have to take our vengeance out on you. Finally, all right. So you can understand that with this kind of being blasted, and remember, Jews had to hear these things in shul on Shabbos. Right? I'm sure you've read at some point or another that the Jewish experience in shul in these times, in many places around France and Germany, was to be forced to hear the local sermon, right? That they were going to give on Sunday, they gave to Shabbos. Yes. So you couldn't go out, like I said, you couldn't go out to the Kiddush club during that time. They forced it. They said you have to pack the houses and listen. All right. So you can understand that the Bechor Shor and Chizkuni and others living in this type of circumstance would pepper their commentaries in a way that was not too obvious, because you could get you can get the censor who would destroy the Perush and its author, and you have to do this carefully. So. I might have referred to this one, but this is really a very obvious one, that Rashbam claims that when Moshe broke the Luchos, right, we always thought he was in this kind of position, right, with two tablets in his hand, threw them. In either anger, maybe controlled anger, but to teach a lesson. No, says Rashbam, he dropped them. They became heavy in his hands. It says Vayashlichem, which seems to mean he threw them. No, Vayashlichem means he pushed them away so they wouldn't fall on his feet. Right? But when he saw the Egel, he became so weak, he couldn't hold them anymore. Now that is so far from pshat. Did we talk about why someone like Rashbam was so sensitive to pshat, why he would say such a thing? Because in Christian theology, the broken luchos is a harbinger for the broken covenant that Yirmiyahu talks about in chapter 31. Never mind that Yirmiyahu does not refer to a broken Torah. He refers to a new covenant. They call it New Testament. A new covenant, the Brit Chadoshah. Now, a Brit Chadoshah in no way means Torah Chadoshah. Brit Chadoshah means a new way that you'll keep the Torah. And he says what the Brit Chadoshah is. I won't have to beat you into keeping my Torah. You'll keep it naturally. Whatever that means, we'll look in the Gemaras and look at the Mefarshim and find. But to say that this means that the Torah is abrogated, so if you would say this to a Christian, the Christian would say, forget about Jeremiah 31. It's in the Torah. Moses knew this, and he broke the Luchos, knowing that Jesus would one day, with the blessing of God, say that you don't have to keep the Torah anymore. Right? It's a new covenant. So the way to respond to this is not really to go on the offensive, because it's hard to go on the offensive of a theology like this. Instead, it would go back to the basics and say, excuse me, Moshe accidentally broke the Luchos. You mean he accidentally abrogated the covenant? So that's very interesting that you find these willy-nilly, deeply embedded within the Perushim. I'm not saying that this is something you're going to figure out on your own. You obviously have to know the Christian theology in order to know what it is that he is undoing, because they couldn't tell you in their commentary that they're doing it. They would get...
But God approved his deed 100%. He said he did the right thing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
It doesn't look like Rashi.
Yeah, fine. The fact is that it's, at times Rashbam will write with this interpretation. You have your answer to if they, and you know what that means. Okay, so let me just discuss a few chidushim away from this topic. I'll just do a Bechor Shor and Chizkuni. There's this great parish of the Chizkuni that says, and again, they're always, like I did last week with the Das Akenemi, Balei HaTosfos, they're always some kind of a chap, real chiddush, a real... Let me do a few. Chizkuni, maybe I'll visit Das Kanim afterwards. The Chizkuni on the pasuk by Yehiyu ki yamim achodim ba'avaso osa. Yaakov was working 7 years for Rachel, and he says that it were like about a few days. The exact same words that Rivka used to describe when I'll call for you, right? V'yoshavta imo yomim achodim ad asher tashuv chamas achicha. Stay with him a few days, a couple of days. Don't worry, he'll cool off in a few days. It's been 22 years, Mom! Right? So when it says that he worked for 7 years, it says the exact same words. So the Chizkuni says, wait a second. When you love someone so much like that, a few days is going to feel like 7 years, not vice versa. What is it that made 7 years feel like a few days? So Chizkuni says, Ba'ava so osa. This is called thinking outside the box. Ba'ava so osa, you always thought, was
Rachel.
No, it's the work he was doing. The Avodah was Ki yamim achadim ba'ava so osa. Yaakov has been sitting in Yeshiva Shem Ve'ever all his life. He's been learning, his Yoshev Ohalim. Finally, he's going out to work, and he tried to make it something that he enjoyed doing. It's nice to work with your hands. Yigia kapecha is finally, he's making a living. So this is what made the days go quickly. When you are moving quickly. When you are looking forward to something and you're doing something that you enjoy doing, that goes very quickly, right? I have this helping a few people who are nebuch doing time, if you know what I'm saying, and I give them curriculum to do, and they say that usually when you're doing too, well, the days to go by, when you throw off the calendar week after week, month after month, right? But when you're learning and you're learning towards a goal and you have a big huge curriculum to do, then you the time is your friend and they come out learning. I've just learned four mesechtes and 12 books of Tanakh and they love what they did with their time. They didn't have any distractions or phone calls, right?
They're talking about incarceration.
Yes, and you read between the lines. Yes.
Is there an explanation for the time going by quickly other than that?
In other words, you don't like this parish.
I mean, this parish is not like that.
It's certainly not the shop. No, but it's just thinking outside the box. Let me give you another example where I love that the Chizkuni says something fascinating in Devarim. And again, I'm picking on it because if I can inspire you to get the Chizkuni and read him on the parsha, it's really an out of the box thinker. On the pasuk in the beginning of Devarim, if this is a new thing you haven't heard before, it's going to be a little shocking. On the pasuk, Ve'ela hadvarim asher diber Moshe al b'nei Yisrael. This is the first pasuk in Sefer Devarim, right? And it lists a number of places that are very, very strange. We never heard of these places before. Molsuf and Ben Tofel Va'avon, Chatzir. Some of these we've heard of, but Rashi says in each one refers to a different place where b'nei Yisrael were rebuked for something they did wrong. So Moshe doesn't want to say them outright because that'll embarrass them. So when you rebuke someone, try to do it in a way that will willy-nilly they'll hear it, but they won't get the full brunt of the pitch. Okay, fine? So one of the places that it says that Moshe spoke these words was Be'ever Hayarden. Not a big deal here, right? Be'ever Hayarden. But these two words, Be'ever Hayarden, gives a fit to Ibn Ezra. At least according to a parish in Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra, wait a second. These are the words that Moshe spoke. Now, what does Be'er Yarden mean?
The other side of the Yarden.
Right.
You mean he was in Israel?
These are the words that Moshe spoke on the other side of the Yarden. Now, will you please imagine with me here that here is the Yarden. Here's Israel.
Right.
Here's the Mediterranean. You with me? Right. Here is the other side of the Yarden.
The Jordan?
Okay, yeah. This is the Yarden, right? Here's the Yam HaMelech, here's the Kinneret. Get with me, this is towards India. Okay, you got me now? All right,
yeah.
So if you say, these are the words that Moshe spoke on the other side of the Yarden, where must be this person talking?
In Israel.
Israel side.
Right, now, where did the Torah end?
Before they got in.
Oh, they got into Israel and Sefer Yehoshua.
Yes. Hold on.
Okay. So if it says these are the words that Moshe spoke on the other side of the Yarden, Moshe died here, right?
Yeah,
never got in here.
He wasn't supposed to.
Okay. So this is like a bombshell parish of Ibn Ezra that another Rishon at least reads in between his lines. Look up Ibn Ezra on that pasuk, and he says just something very cryptic. He says, if you accept the secret of the 12, then you will also accept, he mentions four psukim, you will recognize the truth, and you'll be silent. Right? So what Ibn Ezra actually meant with this comment, is even Dr. Lyman came here and talked about it once, it's a very cryptic thing. Okay? But the Chizkuni throws the whole thing out the door by saying that Be'ever HaYarden always means this side, no matter where you're talking. For instance, let me give an example. Because Be'ever HaYarden can be a direction, or it can be a place. You know what I'm saying? Let me give an example. Let's say you're leaving from here and you're going to 14th Street. You're doing some shopping and you say, I'm taking the train downtown and I'm going to do some shopping. Now, if you were going from Brooklyn to 14th Street, you might also say, where you're going, I'm going to do some shopping downtown. Now, that is technically wrong. Because from Brooklyn, 14th Street is uptown. So can someone still get away with saying, I'm going shopping downtown, and refer to 14th Street even though you're coming from Brooklyn? Because downtown is not necessarily a direction. It could be like a place. If Be'ever HaYarden is a direction, then Ibn Ezra is right. These words were spoken here in Israel, which has its own ramifications I won't get into right now. But if Chizkuni is right, that Be'ever HaYarden is not necessarily a direction, it's a place. And you can call it Be'ever HaYarden even if you're writing it here, especially anticipating that just a few weeks from now the people are going to be there reading this, right? So you can get away with that. You know what I'm saying? That? No, this mostly goes right above all the people who study Devarim, it goes right over their head. But it's a very interesting Shach B'Vatari. If you're on the level to read Ibn Ezra, we'll talk about him next week. And in the next few weeks, actually, but this is just an interesting thing with the Chizkuni being more from the certainly from the traditional world. The French and German world at this time was much more traditional, right? They were let's say what kind of yeshiva can I call that today? But the Spanish world was much more philosophical. They had secular educations. Right, so we'll see that there were one or two Mefarshim who really got the best of both of these worlds. Right, and I would say the one who combined all of it, the tradition of a French upbringing with the finest schooling being exposed to the Sephardic world of Arabic and grammar are you picking up on who I'm talking about right now?
Okay.
Radak, exactly. Radak is the one, possibly even more than Ramban, is the one who combined both of these worlds, especially because Radak was born on the French and Spanish border, so it makes sense. He went to YUM Lakewood. Right? We're going to get to the Radak in the next month. Okay, so Chizkuni, go out, get him, nice pink cover, Mosad Rav Kook, all in one volume. I mean, it's a gimme. $12, $13, I don't sell it, but you can get it in this farm store. Okay, I want to tell you a beautiful Dasakenim, Mibalei HaTosfos. I know we did him last week. I shouldn't say him, it's them. You don't know one, it's not one person, just like Tosfos is not one person. In the beginning of this week's parsha, Rashi is amazed that Yaakov says in his prayer to Hashem for the fear of his brother, he says, please, Ribono Shelolam, protect me. And he says, Elokei Avraham veElokei Yitzchak. So Rashi goes through a whole arichus. How can he refer to his father as Elokei Yitzchak? He's still alive. And Rashi goes through a whole, because at the end of the parsha, he refers to him as Pachad Yitzchak. At that point, he had died already. Or at least it says he died in the parsha, right? Yitzchak lived past Mechiras Yosef in reality. But Lemaisa, how does he call him Elokei Yitzchak? And Rashi, look at Rashi at the beginning of the parsha for an elaborate, detailed interpretation. And listen to what the Daz Kanim says. He says, so pashut. Yaakov must have been wondering to himself, wait a second, didn't Esav say, as soon as my father dies,
right,
I'll kill my brother?
Yeah.
Right? So, why is Yaakov afraid of approaching his brother?
Because Esau's not done.
Because he thought Yaakov. His father died.
Uh-oh.
In other words, if you reinterpret Rashi's whole assumption that Yaakov knows Yitzchak is alive and then has to fetch out a reason why he said, okay, Yitzchak, which you can only say for someone who's dead, it's very possible, says the Das Kanim, that Yaakov thought that Yitzchak was dead by the very fact that Esav is coming out with 400 men. Now, it's very possible that that Esav changed his mind. He said, you know what? I've waited long enough to kill my brother. I'm not going to wait for my father to die. He called me over that day and said, Lo yadati, yom mosi, I don't know when I'm going to die. So I figured he's going to die in a couple of weeks, a couple of months. I'll get my vengeance on my brother. It's taken 20 years already. By the way, Yitzchak lived another 30, 40 years after that. But still, Yaakov, you could forgive him for thinking, this is what he says, Vayira vayetzer lo. Right?
Yeah.
The Rashi kind of thing is to say Yaakov was fearful and distressed. So, for the average person reading the text, say, hey, he's fearful and distressed. But do I have to say fearful of this and distressed for that?
Distressed.
But that's what Rashi does. Rashi will always do that. Fearful that he may have to be killed. Distressed that he may kill others. Okay, that's Rashi. The Das Kanan, who also reads Bible the same way, doesn't read it that way because I have to give a chiddush. You know, Rashi said that. I have to give another perush. That doesn't mean he disagrees with Rashi. But he says, Vayira, because he may kill me. Vayetzer lo. If Esav wants to kill me, my father must be dead.
Right.
It's the first time he ever... That's why he said, Elokei Yitzchak.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the Das Kanan.
Right. Say that again.
Right.
If he wants to kill me, the dad must be dead. So the first time he comes to that realization. Okay. All right, let me do just a perusha to a Bechor Shor, and that's in this week's Parsha. Yes? Rashi didn't make that up. It's a Gemara that you shouldn't mitzdarif Hashem to a living person. It's sort of like the rule that you can't put a living president on a coin or something like that.
Oh, really?
Saying? They waited until Kennedy and Roosevelt died before they put him on a nickel, a dime, and a half dollar. But anyway, la deal. The Bechor Shor. Read if you have a chance to see the Bechor Shor is also all in one volume. For some reason, I have about four of them. If anyone wants, I could be one of them. The Bechor Shor is a great single volume. Everyone should own it. I mean, if you want to start building a serious Jewish library of Parshanut, go to Westside Judaica. Rashbam is in one volume. You get it for $9, right? You have to have Chizkuni. You have to have Bechor Shor. You should have Das Kanan Mibalei HaTosfos. If you want to be serious about learning the Bible from Rashi's school, you got it. You should have these things.
Are they transliterated? No.
You know what? Some of these are, actually.
Yes, okay.
Rabbi Monk has translated a tremendous amount of Parshanut. You know, you could look it up. You can see what's available. Okay, So the Bechor Shor in Parshas Vayishlach, I'm just going to tell you this flat out. He spends a lot of time worrying about how Yaakov could possibly approach his brother with the fear that he wants to kill me. Surely he thinks that. You know, peni kani emal banim, right? He has to balance that, Chizkuni creates in the whole Perush, with not insulting him, but making him think that he wants to kill me in case he doesn't.
Oh boy!
Uh-huh.
Read how the Bechor Shor goes through that whole mahalach, because of all the mafarshim I've ever seen, especially in the French world, the Bechor Shor goes through the whole parsha saying Esav is a tzaddik in this parsha. Anyone else would have treated him different. I know Rashi says he tried to bite his neck and
his teeth broke,
all that kind of stuff. Bechor Shor says, "You prove that to me. I don't see it." Even within Chazal, Chazal admit that if he had harbored some ill feelings, he certainly didn't have them there that day. So why does he come out with 400 men? That's the question. Yes, he says, not because he wanted to kill Yaakov, but...
He wanted to show him his strength?
He wanted to show him that I could.
Uh-huh. And he had dinner
and that's at Sadiq?
I don't know. Well. Okay. All right, so... Let us turn our attention now to this page that I give out. Is not enough? Is there a pile down there someplace? Please turn them back. Please pass them back. Can you pass down those sheets with one piece of mandel bread, please? No, actually, if you don't mind passing the 7 up a little bit. No, I'm kidding about the mandel bread.
I'll take it.
Thanks. Actually, you know, some people down here want some, so yeah, Taka, bring it down.
Yeah, Taka.
Better than those spicy things.
Okay. Now, what I have here are, as I think I showed you earlier this year, I have three Kisvei Yad of the Rashi, the originals of these would be extremely valuable. Three Kisvei Yad of Rashi, very, very different types of Kisvei Yad. They're all on Sefer Melachim. Right? This piece here is Rashi to Sefer Melachim. Can you imagine what it means to have this Perush Rashi to the old Tanakh, what it was like to have in a individual's library, and all it is Perush Rashi. Right, sometimes they're rich enough to afford to get someone to put down Targum Yonah on also, and sometimes even the text of the book he's commenting on. But very often it was just Perush Rashi. You have to figure out what the. It's very hard to read this stuff. Right, page after page, just the Perush. Wow. Not even like an underlined description of what you're commenting on, right?
Do you see any differences between that?
Okay, so here, and that's why I'm telling you this now. This happens to be Melachim, right? And Melachim happens to be famous in Perush Rashi to have somehow incorporated so much foreign material. Now, today we have discovered who got all this material into Rashi. And it's going to surprise you tremendously. Right? Last week I mentioned to you that we would discuss Rashi Yoshan. Remember that? Okay. So right. The person who gets his material into Rashi is the Arizal. Why the Arizal, living in the 1550s, got material into Kisvei Yad of Rashi? It's just hard to understand. I always love to quote one of them. I'm on the board of NACO, North American Conference of Ethiopian Jewry, and they have a tradition that they are descended from Shlomo and Queen of Sheba.
And Queen of Sheba.
Yeah, and Sheba Dan is a much more popular tradition. But there's a tradition that they're descended from Shlomo and Queen of Sheba. Now, the reason why that's so perplexing is because there's no Maimer Chazal that says this. You don't find a Medrash that says there's an identifiable connection to the heirs of this. Now, where would anyone even think of saying that? Okay, there is a pasuk that hints at it. After the Queen of Sheba gave him all those tests and she gave him all those gifts, it says that he entertained her and gave her everything she wanted.
Oh boy.
You can interpret that the way you will. Rashi, this is not like Rashi. Why would he say such a thing without a source? You find in the Kiros Gedolos of Rashi, it says he gave her a child, and that child is the founder Rashi does not write about Ethiopian Jews. Rashi just writes that they have a child. Ethiopian Jews have a tradition of that. Orly, is that something that you? Orly is works for Nakoch. Have you heard of this tradition before? Yeah? Okay, good. Anyway, but the thing is that, and this was a question that Glenn just asked, none of these three Kisvei Yad obviously have. This is dated 1273, it's 300 years before the Arizal. So they don't have it. It's not in here, because it was never in here. It was never, Rashi never said it. It's now, more modern Mikros Gedolos that are printed, if anyone wants to look up this story of the Queen of Sheba, it even says in the Mikros Gedolos, these are not the words of Rashi, this is Samach Aleph Aleph, which means you don't find this in other Girsaos. That's pretty much Baruch Hashem has been corrected, because now we have more scientific endeavors in determining what Rashi originally had said. So here's what I'd like to pose to you, just a few examples of why it's so important to have a scholarly edition of Perush Rashi. Okay, so take a look at let's look at where it says Tuf Vav Mem, would you? Okay. You see Tuf Vav Mem. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, it says in the Kriyat Shema, if you don't listen to me, I'm going to kick you out of this land, you'll be lost from this land, and then it says, and put these words next to your heart, and tie them around your arm, and put them between your eyes. Okay. So Rashi on that pasuk says, let's take a look at what's written here, it says, Samtemist right, Afla achar shetiglu. It says, I'll kick you out of your land. After you leave your land, heyu mitzuyonim b'mitzvus. Huh? Did we hear that terminology before? Hey, you mitsuyanim the mitzvahs? What does it mean? Mitsuyan means usually like excellent. You ever see a teacher give you an excellent mitsuyan? What does mitsuyan have to do with being excellent? Do you know that the word mitsuyan is related to Tzion, Zionist? Is mitsuyan about his love for Israel? Right? What does it mean? So students of Rashi know that when he uses a terminology like this, he couldn't make it up. He had to have gotten this from someone. He actually gives you the clue as we read on. Take a look. How can you be mitsuyanim b'mitzvahs, so excellent in mitzvahs? Hanichu tefillin, v'asu mezuzahs. Keep putting on tefillin, keep putting up those mezuzahs. Kedei shelo yihyu lochem chadoshim kishetechazru. So these things are not new to you when I take you back to the land. Right? You thought that Eber Yarden was controversial. What is he saying here? Did you get this? He's saying that the tefillin I wore this morning is tluyos ba'aretz? What? I thought just Shemitah, Trumas and Maestros. I know there are some mitzvahs we only do in Israel, but I didn't think tefillin and mezuzahs were among them.
Why not?
Rashi is saying, don't forget to keep wearing tefillin and mezuzahs when you're taken to France and you're living outside of Israel. But when you return to Israel, so that when you return to Israel, you'll know what you're doing. Yeah. But outside of Israel, you're just wearing it for practice. Now, I'm aware very well of the Gemara, that the Gemara does tell us to do certain things, especially in the lands, outlying lands of Israel, right? That we did give Trumas and Maaseros. In some places we did keep Shemitah, we did give Challah, we did give Trumas, we did keep some of the mitzvahs of Tluyos Ba'aretz, so that we wouldn't forget them, right? Shelo tishtakech Toras Challah, Toras Trumah, right? So Rashi gives you a proof text. Take a look. V'chein hu omer, Hatsibi loch tziyunim. And he also says, Hatsibi loch tziyunim. Now, I don't have to ask you to be scholars here, because you can just look up source number 44 in Avraham Berliner and see what this is talking about. But let's say you're just reading a Rashi, you just have a chumash with Rashi, and you don't have a Meforshe Rashi. Right? Some of them didn't even get this right. What do you mean, V'chein hu omer Hatsibi loch tziyunim? Does this pasuk ring a bell to anybody here? Does anybody think it's a pasuk? Yes, it is a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Yes, Yirmiyahu chapter 31, where Yirmiyahu says, get this, you're about to leave the land. When you leave the land, Hatsibi loch tziyunim, so you know your way back. That's what the Zionist is. Always, wherever you live, you know your way back to Israel. Tziyunim, what's a tziyun? A marker. Tziyun kvaros is to make sure, Kohen, don't walk here, someone's buried here. A tziyun is a marker. Set up markers for yourself. In what way is tefillin and mezuzahs a marker? So that we can know how to do it when we get back to Israel? I don't get it. So hold on. Hatsibi loch tziyunim. What do you do to see? What do Chazal say about this pasuk? All right, so there are plenty of good books for this. You don't have to go online. Take a look at, there's a book called HaTorah HaKsuva VaHamesura. It gives you every pasuk in Tanakh, and all the 50 or 60 places where Chazal darshan this, or even where Rashi or the Rambam or anyone quotes this pasuk to teach a halacha or a medrash. So the very first source, Hatzivi Loch Tziyunim, it's not a very commonly darshaned pasuk in Tanakh, but Hatzivi Loch Tziyunim is darshaned in two places in Chazal in the way that Rashi's saying. Right? And in fact, you see the note at the bottom, this is Avraham Berliner, who says, right? Let's read the whole note. Let's read it. Ayin b'Ramban shekasav al divrei Rashi ki amitzvah sa'elu chovas haguf hein shenahagu gam b'chutz laretz. Ramban says, what is Rashi talking about? Tefillin and mezuzos are chovas haguf, they're not chovas haaretz. They're an obligation on the body wherever you are in the world. I know some mitzvahs that are not obligations on my body. It's an obligation on the land of Israel. Right, but these aren't. What's Rashi doing? V'emes v'sifrei lo chashav mitzvahs pratios. And in fact, if you look up this pasuk in the Sifrei, where it says, Hatsibi loch tziyunim, when you leave Israel, keep doing it, it doesn't tell you any specific mitzvahs. Why did Rashi volunteer mitzvahs here? V'ayin v'aksava kabbala shehera ala medrash eicha pasuk karosi l'ma'ahavai b'zeu aloshen Rav Shimon b'yochai pasach karo b'nevi'ei ha'emes shehayu ma'ahavino sol HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hema rimuni, shayu maramin bi, v'omrim li, hafrishu trumos umaisros, v'chiyesh trumos umaisros bevavel, ela bishvil ahaveni la kodesh baruch hu, hu shir miyahu amar hatzibi lach tziyunim. Hatziveni b'mitzvos, sheyu Yisrael mitzuyanim b'hem, ad kan l'shona. The Ksava Kabbalah got it right. He quotes a medrash that says that B'nai Yisrael wanted to do more mitzvahs outside of Israel than they could. They wanted to give mitzvahs that they could only do in Israel. So what were two of the mitzvahs they did? Trumos and Maestros. Shneemar Hatzibi Loch Tziyunim. What happened in the Ksav Yad of Rashi? Look on the side. I give you the hint. What mistake happened? Right. The Rashi's manuscripts were originally written. We see the earliest ones. And many Rishonim wrote almost every third word with Rosh Hatedos.
With what?
Abbreviated words.
Oh.
Because parchment was expensive. Ink was expensive. Everything was shorthand. So if you wanted to write Trumas and Maestros shorthand, you wrote the words. Tough of Mem. You see what's happening there?
Oh.
So that's what he says. You look what I underlined. He writes underneath, right underneath. It was Tough of Mem. B'movan, Trumas and Maestros. B'nishtapshu me'oz u'mikedem likro tefillin u'mezuzos.
So then the word Hanichu also has...
Someone put it in, The Vilna Gaon actually points that out and shows how that...
Because there's
right?
No way.
Right?
Please.
Right, you wouldn't say Hanichu Trumas. Basu Maizu. Yes. Those are the next two mitzvahs in the pasuk. That's certainly how the mistake came in.
You can also see that coming here from the way as opposed to Trumas and Maizu.
The very next pasuk, absolutely. Something with Ra'ela Alavavchem, right. Where do you put these words? These words go into Tefillin and these words go into Mezuzahs, I understand. But the original Memra said Trumas and Maestros from Rishon Bar Yochai. So Rashi says Berliner, we have no proof of this. He doesn't have a proof from a Ksav Yad. Because all the Kisvei Yad say Tefillin and Mezuzahs. Means that when you leave Israel, the Samtem is to write Eile al Levavchem, is whatever things that you usually do when you're in Israel. I mean, it's a difficult drash. But why Rashi would institute here the amazing Chiddush, never found in any Gemara in Shas, that mitzvahs are only to be kept in Israel by the Jew, and once you leave Israel, you're keeping them only for practice. Yes. Wow, that should have been someplace before Rashi.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You hear? But the Gemara does mention very clearly that there are a number of mitzvahs that we do keep for practice outside of Israel. Trumas and Maestros, Challah, Shemitah, in outlying areas. So that is why it's important to have the proper Ksav Yad and the proper sources. So this comes from Berliner. So again, if you want to be a good student of Rashi, you want to get Avraham Berliner's... I have Berliner as one of the modern... scholars at the bottom of the page in May and June. So my son Moshe came to me to say, he goes, wait, you have the Netziv and Berliner. What are you doing? So, isn't the Netziv Berliner? I says, Moshe, the Netziv is Berlin. Berlin. Berliner is a different person.
Yeah.
Avraham Berliner was the first person after 400 years of the printing press to actually put the Rashi to the scholarly test. It was the first scholarly Rishon to be written, meaning from a number of Kisvei Yad, comparing them and deciding which word was real, which word wasn't. And he when he says something, the world listens. I mean, he wrote this in 1876, and still it's the standard text to be used for Rashi.
Wow.
He wrote a second edition from which this copy comes in 1905, but his original work was 1876, and still everyone's using it. I must confess to you, though, as I think I told you before, is that there is some work being done now. I mentioned the name Elazar Twito, where they are finding some older Kisvei Yad than 1240, and they're reevaluating some of Rashi. Okay, let me give you. Let's do the Chof Aleph example for just a moment. Okay. Can you figure out what's wrong in the next Rashi? See where it says Shom Sam Lo Chok Mishpat Bimara Nasan Lahem Miktsas Parshios Shel Torah. When the Jews were at Mara, they received some parshios that were later given in the Torah. This is in Parshas B'Shalach. Shisaskubem, so that they could have, they can learn, in addition to Shabbos, Para Aduma, the Dinim. Shabbos, Para Aduma, and Dinim. That's in addition to the seven mitzvahs B'nei Noach. And when it says, Kisham Sam Lo Choku Mishpat, there God gave them Choku Mishpat. What's the Chok? Para Aduma.
Right.
What's the Mishpat? Dinim. And Shabbos, why would Rashi include Shabbos? Chevra, Hashem did give them Shabbos in Parshas B'Shalach.
Right?
He said, don't pick up the man on Shabbos. You're going
right,
to have to...
Right, right.
So Shabbos was given to them before Matan Torah. Okay, Shabbos I can't argue with. Chok u Mishpat. Chok is Parah. What's the Chok? It's Parah Aduma. And Mishpat is Dinim. Mm-hmm. Okay, one problem is that isn't Dinim one of the seven mitzvahs B'nei Noach also?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Or you can explain, no, there's Dinim for seven mitzvahs B'nei Noach and there's Dinim for Torah. He gave them more Dinim. Oh, fair enough. Good. Right? A lot of the dinim are the same. And whenever you talk about like yeshiva shem ve'iver, they were learning in the ancient world, how much can you learn from seven mitzvahs, for goodness sakes? Plenty. One of those is dinim, which contains a billion mitzvahs.
Right?
There you go. All right? Okay, but anyway, there's a mistake here. There's a mistake. There's a mistake that contradicts Rashi in a number of places in his parish. Actually, Shabbos should be mentioned here not only because we see it's referred to in Parshas B'Shalach with respect to the man, but when the Aseres HaDibros were given, it says, Shamor es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho Ka'asher Tzivi Sicha, the way I commanded you. The Aseres HaDibros refers to Shabbos as something I already commanded you.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Question. There is one other of the Aseres HaDibros that also says, keep this law as I already commanded you. Which of the other nine Dibros does it say, I already commanded you on this?
Wait a second.
Avodah Zarah, you would think, because it certainly was, it's been, right? Can you find it? It says Yaakov in Parsha, this week's Parsha says, put away that those idols that you took from Shechem.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But you could probably argue that there is some kind of reference, but it's not. It's the Torah does not say Kasher Tzivisicha there. It says it by Kabeda Savicha Vesimecha. You got it? Kabeda Savicha Vesimecha Kasher Tzivisicha. Right? Where?
Where
did Hashem say on your parents? Outright. Where does it say? It's here. It's a very famous Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that when it says Kasher Tzivisicha Neseres HaDibros, it means we got that command already here at Mara. Actually, the Chok is Shabbos, the Mishpat is the Dinim, and Kabeda Savicha Vesimecha is both. But the Gemara says Beferush, the three extra mitzvahs they got upon the seven were Dinim, Shabbos, and Kabeda Savicha Vesimecha. Why is Rashi mentioning Parah Aduma? And it contradicts something Rashi says elsewhere, because Rashi says that the Parah Aduma was given to us as a result of the Egel. He says it a number of times in his parish, in Shmos as well as in
Bamidbar. Kapara for the Chet Egel?
So, kapara for the Chet Egel. So if the Parah Aduma is kapara for the Chet Egel, it makes very little sense to say that here in Parshas B'Shalach they were given Parah Aduma. The Egel hasn't happened yet. Following?
Yeah.
There you go. You see what happened on the side? Rashi wrote Shabbos, the Chof Aleph. This section of the Vilna says also the Chof Aleph. What I find interesting is that Berliner did not have a correction here. This is Berliner here, number 25, Shamsan. I would think there should be some kind of. Well, there's a paid dollar there. Maybe I have to see, maybe they paid dollar or something. But I Chof Aleph, Kibud Av, and a little ink might have just slipped out. I'm sorry.
How do we know this?
I do not have a ksav yad that has the Chof Aleph on. I don't. I have manuscripts dated 200 years, 300 years after Rashi died, that say the word Parah Aduma. The taina here is that the one who wrote that manuscript in 1412 or 1370 was copying from an original manuscript. Maybe one that he had that Rashi wrote that we just don't have today, but he was writing from a much earlier manuscript that just said the letters Chof Aleph, and he got confused, and he looked like a Pei Aleph, and he wrote Parah Aduma. Right? Now, these two examples are this one is maybe a little less compelling, but the reason why I included it is because it's just antithetical to so many Mamre Chazal. If you look on the Pasuk, the Sham Samlochok Mishpat, the Targum Yonason writes seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, kibud avaim, Shabbos v'dinim. The Taser Sedibros, Kasher Tzivisicha, where is it? The Gemara says, here in this Pasuk. It's so common in Chazal that this is kibud avaim was given in this Pasuk. Where does Parah Aduma come in? Especially since it contradicts what Rashi says elsewhere. Yeah, right. In each case, like in the case of Tefillin and Mezuzahs, the reason for the mistake has to be explained too. Right? No question, no doubt about that. Okay, let me just do one more of Rashi, and then we'll let me do this tough. This is not really his parish on the Torah at all, but it's a little entertainment for the end of our discussion of Rashi. Probably everybody in this room has heard about the rumor that Rashi's daughters were tefillin, right?
Yes.
Rashi had three daughters. Two became very, very famous. One we know very little about, and we know practically nothing about his wife, right? And the idea of his daughters wearing tefillin seems to contradict things he writes in the Talmud. Rashi in Maseches Erevin, Daf Tzadik Vav, says that women should not perform mitzvah seisha as mangrama, and to do so constitutes an avera of Bal Tosif. Right? That women do mitzvah seisha as mangrama today and make brachas on them is because Rashi's daughter's son, Rabbeinu Tam, said the minhag of our women, he constantly refers to our women in many, many Tosfosim. He writes in Menachos, Daf Mem Aleph, our women wear talesim with tzitzis on them. Right? Rashi's daughter may have worn tzitzis, but I doubt very highly if she wore tefillin. Let me explain. You could probably find it in maybe online, but there is a book written by a Christian. I have the name in my office. Written by a Christian about styles of rich women in France in the 11th and 12th centuries. Gives you it's black and white, of course, but it's written with dresses, you know, that you might find in a fashion catalog or something. So it shows what rich women were wearing, and it's mastama that Jewish women also wore those things, like now, like then. So it shows that practically all these dresses are four-corner dresses. They have slats in them, like ponchos with corners. Right, so Rashi would say probably not in Rashi's lifetime. Rashi was very machbid that women shouldn't touch a sefer Torah. He writes this, and there were the talmidim of his who write these things in Chuvus and Sefer Pardes and other works of Rashi's talmidim. That Rashi was very strict about these things. So maybe after he died, because his very famous grandsons had a different opinion about mitzvah seisha as mangrama. But the idea of tefillin really is not hinted anywhere in any of Rashi's writings. And here is where I would suggest where this comes from. This Tosfos in Daf Yudal Amud Aleph, very, very wide, goes through the whole top of the page, down the whole bottom of the page of Tosfos. And the Tosfos is about this topic. Can you make brachos if you're not obligated on this particular mitzvah? Can you establish a minhag and make a bracha, like Halel on Rosh Chodesh, which is not a chiyuv, it's a minhag. Right? Sfardim don't make a bracha on Halel, right? On Rosh Chodesh. You only make a bracha on Halel when you finish the whole Halel. Leave more at the Halel, right? So Ashkenazic minhag on these topics is based on this Tosfos. And Tosfos wants to give an example of proof, the very top line, Umiyu asar mikotzi haya omer, dekivon shirotze l'chayiv atzmo mevarech. If someone has a minhag to say Halel, and he wants to say Halel, and he wants to establish a minhag that in my shul from now on we're going to say Halel on Rosh Chodesh, say it with a bracha. This line is what many in Israel use to say Halel with a bracha on Yom HaTzmaut. Okay, if it's an established minhag, go for it. And what does he say? Midi dehave alulav ve'atfilin. Dahani neshim evorchos apagav she'enan chayavos. Like these women make brachos on tefillin and on lulav, even though they're not obligated, it's a time-bound mitzvah, and they wear them and they make brachos. Now, if a woman is making brachos on tefillin, it's because she's wearing tefillin. So if she's wearing tefillin, she's... what does this have to do with Rashi's daughters? Okay, this is a technical thing you need to know. Is that Tosfos, the first Masechta Tosfos wrote on was brachos. That means the first generation of Tosfos were Rashi's grandsons, Rashbam, Rabbeinu Tam, all those cousins and brothers, right? The sons of those two daughters who were all extremely famous, Rabbi Yitzchak, or the most famous of the Balei Tosfos, were all the sons of these daughters. So that if a Tosfos in Maseches Brachos speaks about our women wearing tefillin and making brachos on them, who else could that be but Rashi's daughters? Right. Hold everything. You see that beis right before the word about tefillin? Mm-hmm. Look at the beis on the side. Hagos Habach. The Bach, the Bais Chodosh. Rav Yoel Zirkus, right? He wrote glosses to the Gemara because he had very accurate versions of the Gemara. And he said, my version of this Gemara, of Gemara, Tosfos, Rashi, he says, my version of this Gemara didn't say Tzkios, didn't say Tzkios. Take a look, it says, Tosfos, Dibra Maschel Yomim, Bechul, Midi Dehavi Alulu Va'atzkios Dehani Nishi, etc., etc. The word is not tefillin, the word was tekios. How could someone mistake tefillin for tekios? Well, tekios for tefillin. Yeah, what happened? Look at the side. I gave you the secret there. They wrote, Midi Dehavi Alamid V'Tov. This is the first page of a six-page shir I once gave with 20 such examples of that. So it says the original case was just a tuf with a slash. What are women doing tuf and making brachas on it? What was it? It's kios. Now I find this a little difficult because if you wanted to, I would have said
shofar.
I would have said midi hale alula b'shofar. All right, but he wrote kios. Yes, John.
Yeah, but not only that, I feel like the order's first. In other words, would you put the kios first and then the...
Yeah.
It could be a lot of it's going to be forward.
No, because...
Yeah.
I would just say because lulav is something I dare say probably every woman in this room probably has.
Absolutely.
Shakes every sukkah. But how often do you actually blow shofar?
But you
certainly wanted to hear the shofar this
you
week.
Hear
this year.
It and you
how often did anybody in this room blow shofar? Right? Shofar is something one person does for hundreds of people. Lulav is something everyone does for themselves. So I'd not be surprised that he put lulav first. But anyway, I'm not so convinced. I'd love to see the original Saviad that the Bach is talking about. And I'm sure it just said a tough. There's no question about that. And someone misread it, according to the Bach, to be one way or the other. So the mussar I'm trying to give with this is if you really want to be a scholar when you're reading your sources, by all means, it's crucial and essential to get your hands on the modern material that's out there now, and it's all out there. Scientific editions are out there. So just to review, see if you can. I don't have any deal with West Side Judaica, of course, but I get 20%. But B'chor Shor, Chizkuni, Hadar Zakenim, Da Zakenim, all these are readily available. Maybe if you want to hold out to the YU book sales in February, but they're not really expensive. And now a bigger perk is that you can get these in the Toras Chaim. Now the Toras Chaim Mikros Gedolos has cut away a lot of the fat, excuse me for calling it that, but a lot of the fat, the Targum Yerushalmi, the Targum Yonasan, the Kliyokar and the Or HaChaim that only really Hasidim are studying today, and they're very popular, but people aren't studying them today. I don't know. I mean, how many of you are reading a Seder in Or HaChaim? But so he cut all that out, and he put into the Mikros Gedolos, you know, those blue sfarim, you know what I'm talking about? The new Mossad HaRav Kook, Perushim to the Torah, and they added a whole host of material. They have the Chizkuni in there, they have the Radak for Bereshis in there, they have Ibn Ezra's second Perush, they have Rabbeinu Chananel, they have Rav Sadi Gaon. Listen, we're still just in France, so I haven't told you about many of these. But this will close our discussion of the French school. So we did October, we did Rashi. November, we did his students, Rav Yosef Kara, Roshor, Rashbam, of course, and Haskeni Balei HaTosfos and good Chevra. And next week we're going to take a drastic change in direction, because you're going to see such a difference in the Spanish way to read. If you're reading Torah in the year 1200 and you're living in Spain or possibly Italy, and different than you're reading the Torah if you live in France and Germany. So at first, I am going to cut Ibn Ezra from the same cloth as Rashbam when it comes to how they read Rashi. But as you'll see, the two start to diverge and they're really very, very profoundly different commentaries. Right? You think we probably went to school and said, oh, Rashi is traditional, Rashbam and Ibn Ezra are pshat, Ramban is a combination, and Shoin. That's probably, you know, you could write a little essay on that. But it's really, they're really very different kinds of commentaries. You'll see that Ibn Ezra is much more traditional than Rashbam, that's for sure. Which might be surprising to some of you now, but yes, Ibn Ezra it tries to be traditional. And we'll see about that. Mitzvah Shem next week. Great. Okay, let's catch some Marav next.